Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 24th, 2009. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, Steve Wilkes and I take the plunge into beer judging. We were invited to help judge the Foam Cup competition in Tulsa, Oklahoma this past weekend, and we take you there as we officially judge our first flight of beers. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And as usual, you can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And we have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well, which is now easier to find, facebook.com/basicbrewing. And if you become a fan of the show there, I'll be sending out occasional notices when shows are posted and such. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. The deadline to submit your data for the second Brew Your Own Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment is next week, September 30th. I've heard from a few of you, several of you. I don't know what the definition, what's the dividing line between few and several. But a multiple of you are taking part in the experiment. I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to reading your results. And for those of you new to the show, we're testing whether yeast pitching rates will affect the character of homebrew and the fermentation performance. So, very interesting stuff. Looking forward to compiling that data. I've posted the Basic Brewing video episode featuring our trip to Oregon and to Hop Madness in particular. Andy Sparks and I headed up there to hang out with homebrewers and to see where hops come from and how they're harvested. And now you can see that, too. You can see brewers picking hops and brewing with them right on the campgrounds at Willamette Mission State Park during Hop Madness. And you can follow us as we go to a hop farm to see nugget hops, huge, numerous nugget hops being harvested right out of the field. And you can see the processing facility to see how they're picked, dried, and baled. And how do they get those leaves out of the hops? You can see. And you can also see Andy become one with the hops, as it were, as he literally jumps headfirst into a mountain of cones. I still can't believe he did that. It is awesome. It is truly an awesome sight to see. You can check that out in the latest episode of Basic Brewing Video that's out there on our site. And by the way, those of you who prefer YouTube to iTunes or Zune or whatever you're getting on RSS, if you prefer YouTube for some reason, you can find the latest episode, along with a lot of our video episodes, on our YouTube channel. Man, we're everywhere. We are at youtube.com/basicbrewing. Not a whole lot of people catch our videos there, but I want to give you that option if you want it. So, anyway, speaking of social media and such, I've briefly considered turning off Facebook and Twitter this week because almost everybody I'm following seems to be headed to Denver for the Great American Beer Festival. And we're not going this year, but we are planning to go next year. And as I've said in previous shows, GABF is a great event. And if you've never been, go. You owe it to yourself. It's sold out, by the way, again this year. But as a journalist, it gets tricky to find a new angle on a recurring event like that, especially because it's mostly about craft brewing, not home brewing. There is some home brewing stuff there. But, you know, I wanted to spend the time and the travel budget on something like Hop Madness this year, which is different and wonderful, and it gets less coverage and visibility. So that's why we're not going to GABF. Also, Hop Madness is homebrew based. It's all about the homebrew, which is what we're all about as well. Now, saying all that, I am arranging with Jeff Baer of Craft Beer Radio to capture some homebrew-related content out there in Denver in connection with the Great American Beer Festival. So I hope to have that next week for you, and I hope that Jeff will be joining us. So thanks to Jeff for that, and I hope that he and Greg Weiss, also of Craft Beer Radio, have a blast while they're out there. I think this is the first trip to GABF for Greg, so it'll be interesting to see how he responds to that, what his impressions are. Looking into the mailbag, I got a note from Lee in Ennis, Montana, saying he unintentionally gathered more data for our first BYO, BBR, collaborative experiment, where we asked brewers to leave beer on the primary yeast for an extended period of time to see what happened. Lee says, because of a trip that he took out of town, he left an ESB on the primary yeast for 41 days. He got back and kegged it. And later on, he asked a friend to provide some feedback. And Lee says, I tapped the keg last night while a friend was over. She had no clue there was anything different about that batch of ESB regarding fermentation. I did pump up the IBUs with some Magnum hops compared to the last batch, so I told her it was a little bit more bitter. Lee says she's familiar with the IBU. It was four more IBUs than the last batch she tasted. She said it was very, very tasty, but she slightly preferred the last batch because of the bitterness level. She also said that if she bought a six-pack of either from a store, she'd most definitely go back for another sixer. Lee says, I'd have to agree, the extended time on the yeast cake had no ill effects on flavor or appearance. It looks great, tastes great, and my only worry is that the keg just isn't going to last very long. As per usual, right? So, there you go. More data saying that leaving homebrew on the primary yeast for an extended period of time isn't necessarily a bad thing. Still waiting to hear from the other side of the fence, so if you have a story on the flip side where you suspect that an extended stay on primary yeast spoiled your beer, please drop me a line. You can find me at james@basicbrewing.com or use the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell me where you're from, and please check your email address. Make sure it's spelled correctly on the form. One more quick note, this one from Kevin in Upper St. Clair, Pennsylvania. Kevin says, I was watching the BBC television show Torchwood last night. If you've never seen it, it's kind of a spin-off from Doctor Who. Anyway, Kevin says, Captain Jack enters a hospital to remove some parasite from the body of a dead person in the hospital. He has this bag, or this big case, full of fancy tools, and he pulls out this laser cutter to quickly open up the cavity with a red beam and quickly reseal it with a yellow beam. The end of this fancy laser tool was unmistakable. It was a refractometer. Cool. I'll have to try harvesting some parasites with my refractometer. Appreciate that, Kevin. On a slightly related note, I was shooting an industrial training video not too long ago about handling wastewater. I know, it's a glamorous job. And one of the guys in the treatment facility that I was shooting at pulled out a refractometer to measure a sample. He called it a refractometer, by the way. I looked in the eyepiece to see what he was looking at, and there was an entirely different scale other than bricks in there. So who knew? Other people use refractometers or refractometers. And by the way, for the newbies out there who don't know what a refractometer is, it is another way to take a specific gravity reading or a gravity reading of your wort before fermentation to see how much sugar's in there so you can see the gravity potential alcohol of your beer. The measuring the content of the sugar content in your wort. Now, let's go to our topic for this week. Let me do a little setup for this. This is like a string of little interviews. You may be surprised to know that up until this past weekend, Steve Wilkes and I had never judged an official homebrew competition. It's not that we haven't been asked, but it was my personal feeling. I don't know about Steve, but it was my personal feeling before that I didn't feel really fully qualified. However, when Desiree and Dave Knott of High Gravity, the homebrew store over there in Tulsa, asked us if we'd hop over there, over the state line, to help judge the foam cup competition, I said, what the heck? Let's do it. So the judging was held at Marshall Brewing in Tulsa, and we were able to sample their beers for the first time. Very tasty. I hope that they'll be distributing into Arkansas soon so we can buy them here. Anyway, so Steve and I were assigned Category 16, which is Belgian and French Ale. It was a pretty big flight of beers, 22 beers in all. And we were seated at a table with three other judges, luckily more experienced than we were. I was paired with Tim Peasley, and Steve was paired with the other two, Aaron Mayer, I believe, and Gene Collins. And we essentially divided the big flight of beers between us. We halved the table there. Steve and I each had microphones, so I thought it'd be a good idea to interview our mentors on either side of the table to get a different perspective on the process. So first you'll hear my side of the table, and then Steve's side, and then back to me. And then after the judging, we talked together to compare notes, and then we got with Desiree and Dave on the windy loading dock out back to get an overview of what it's like to put something like this together. So, I hope that's all understandable, because here we go. Okay, Tim, you're saddled with the awesome responsibility of leading me through my first judging experience. And I'm a little nervous, because people have, you know, they've got a lot riding on this. They've worked hard to brew these beers. They've paid money to enter this competition. And here we are. So, how experienced are you in judging these things?
Well, I've been brewing for about 10 years, and I've judged these competitions for about 5, so I'm fairly experienced. And you know, all you have to do is just really take your time. If you're not sure, ask a question.
So what's the procedure? What have we got here in front of us, and what are we supposed to do? Take me from the ground up. I'm a newbie. I know nothing.
Okay, we have a set of people that are stewarding this. They bring out the beers. They pull the beers out in order. That's already set up by the judge, the head judge. They bring the beer over and show it to you. You've already got your score sheet filled out. So you put your name. You got to put your name and the entry number, basically. You look at, you know, they pour the beer out for you, 2 or 3 ounces in a small glass. You look at it. You smell it. And you taste it, and then you judge it based on the type of beer and the style, and that you try to try and judge that against a particular style of beer, basically. So, and usually there's a. This morning they had a calibration beer, which was a commercial beer in that style. So you taste that one first, so you kind of get an idea what it's supposed to taste like.
So. What should I be looking out for? What do you think is the biggest challenges that you found over the past few years?
Well, there's the challenges is to try to be fair, you know, not be overly critical, just to provide constructive criticism and provide constructive criticism. Check the style sheet. They'll give you a style sheet that shows you what the style should look like, taste like, you know, how it should feel in your mouth, you know. And then if you do find any problems with it, try and give constructive criticism, like if it's got some kind of contamination or something like that. That's about all you can do.
So this, we're trying to fit these beers. We're trying to figure out how well these beers fit in these pigeonholes. It's not, I mean, we could come across an amazing beer that's completely off style, and it could lose.
If it's off style, it's not going to score very well. I mean, you could really be in awe of the beer, but still it wouldn't score very well because it's the wrong category, and that does happen. It's unfortunate, but it does happen.
So it's just someone not entering in the right category.
Yeah, if they're inexperienced, you know, they may not know the exact category, or it just could get mismarked, or, you know, things happen. It doesn't happen that often, though. Usually they're within style, and there's just some slight problems with them. It's like anything else. A lot of them are average, and there's some real standouts, and there's some real dogs.
So we don't know how many beers in each style we're going to be tasting today. Or do we?
Right now I don't, because they haven't brought out the pull sheet, but normally you do. I mean, they'll bring out a pull sheet, and it'll have all the beers on it. So, no, I haven't seen that yet. I'm not sure where our steward is.
We're stewardless. But it's good because it gives us time to talk. It gives me some time to come up to speed here. And I'm sure I'll have some questions as we go along, and I appreciate your patience. But how do I avoid palate fatigue? I mean, if we get a big long line, a big long flight of beers, we're doing Category 16, which is the Belgian ales and the French ales. So not necessarily one that would wear out your palates as quickly as, say, Imperial IPAs or sour beers or something like that. But what?
It's like with anything else. If you get overpowered with it, you've got to get away from it. They've got crackers on the table and water, and you can go eat a piece of bread or something, and, you know, just give your drink water. Just try and clear your palate out. So it's kind of like similar to wine tasting. I mean, you clear your palate in between each sample.
So could we see? I mean, is there a specific regime that you follow? Is there a simple or something that you do to make sure that you're not, like, weighting the first beer that you tasted differently from the last? I mean, do you go back after you've tasted them initially?
You can go back. You can request to retaste the beer. They keep all the beers out on the table until you're done. So if you think you've made a mistake, you know, later on you think, well, this beer is just as good as the seventh beer, and I scored it a lot worse. So, yeah, you can request to go back and recheck them. That's one of the reasons they keep them all on the table for you. And, you know, some people, I know in the last judging I did this morning, the head judge kept all the beers lined up in front of him in order so he could go back and check them, you know, the small sample.
Anything else before we get started that I should be thinking about?
No, you just have to take your time and ask questions if you don't know. And, you know, I'm not an expert really either, so I could be asking questions of somebody too. There's a head judge, you know, if you have a problem, you can always call him over.
And I understand that there are a lot of a fairly good percentage of BJCP certified judges in the room. So
I don't know what the percentage is, but I know this club has a pretty high percentage. And, you know, if you want to know that, we could probably find that out.
Well, we'll talk to Dave and Desiree here in a little bit.
Dave,
but so here we're ready to go. Are you ready to go, Tim?
I'm ready to go. We're just waiting for our stewards to get around. We might have to get up and go see who's supposed to be taking care of this table.
We've already had our first glitch.
I think he's one person for everybody, so he's a little busy with your co-conspirator there.
So it's all Steve's fault. All right. Well, we will pause and then we'll come back.
Okay. Hey, you guys, because we're going to be talking, and I want to make sure that we don't misidentify each other. So would you mind giving me your name?
Aaron Meyer.
Gene Collins.
Gene Collins, who had a mouthful of food, and I stuck a microphone in front of his face.
I'm all right.
So that's just a little bit of business so that we don't screw up. Okay. I have never in my life judged a beer other than for my personal use. So can you guys walk me through what we're going to do and how we're going to do it? A little bit? Tell me what's involved. What's involved in making this thing work? What's involved in judging a beer?
Reviewing the style guidelines to determine what the parameters for the proper beer is, for the style that the beer was entered in. And then going through the judging sheet and evaluating the appearance, aroma, flavor, mouthfeel, and the overall impression, and how that relates to the guidelines. And then based on, you know, how things taste or smell or feel, and then based on the guidelines, giving it a numeric score, and obviously tallying it up and corroborating with the other judges in order to get a make sure that everybody's on the same page and that you're not overlooking anything.
So we're not really looking for necessarily whether it, well, we are looking to see whether it's a good or bad beer, but it could be a good beer in the wrong category.
It could be a good beer in a bad, in the wrong category that would score lower. It could be that it's not your personal preference of what you personally like. It could be something you don't really care for. But because everything is going against the style guidelines, it is on an even playing field. And as long as everybody is impartial and judges everything accurately as they're supposed to against the guidelines, then everything should be a fair and even balanced judging.
So we're kind of looking for a collective wisdom here.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Okay, great. Okay, so teach me to be a judge. I mean, in other words, I've never done this. So what is it that I need to do to do this?
You kind of put me on the spot.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. The questions will get harder as we go.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Have you stopped beating your wife? Answer yes or no.
I don't have a wife.
Okay, well, you're off the hook.
Well, I mean, when I go through a session, you know, I've, first of all, if you're not familiar with the judging sheet, review the judging sheet. See, you know, on one side it has the, you know, different flavors and aromas and things to look for, off flavors most of the time. Other times it may be that they'll be included with the beer, like esters, fusels, phenols, alcohol. And they may be large components to the desired flavors and aromas of the beer, depending on the style. So you kind of review the score sheet, and you review the style guidelines for what you're going to be judging. Whenever you change a category, make sure you review those just to freshen your memory. And then when you're going through the judging process, depending on what your personal preference is, I like to start with appearance and aroma, flavor, mouthfeel, and overall impression, just because that's the way I normally appreciate beer, is by the look, by the smell, by the taste. Once you taste it, how it feels, and then your final impression of the beer. But as you're going through each section of the score sheet, I tend to reference different key points in my feedback between, you know, the aroma. Well, I'll write down, I'll start and just smell the beer and write down your feedback. And then when you're finished doing that, then go back to the guidelines, see what the guidelines say, and then give additional feedback if it's necessary as far as, does this fit with the style guidelines, does this not fit with the style guidelines? And that way, when you get down to the end, the overall impression gives further feedback to help the brewer make something better. It'll give them, you know, more of a confidence boost that they have made something that's a great beer, or, you know, maybe needs to sit a couple more years, maybe changing their brewing style or something that's obvious and evident through the flavor and the aroma and the, everything that we're judging, that it makes them be able to make a better product.
So this isn't just about who's going to win or lose. It's about helping everybody become a better brewer.
Yeah, that's the primary purpose. It's not about scores. It's not about entering to win. It's about entering in order to get accurate and hopefully good feedback from the judges, who hope, you know, most have some sort of experience, or at least a couple judges per table have some experience, and get some better feedback so you can make something better. It's not about winning or losing. That's just a side benefit.
Absolutely. Thanks. Okay. So, guys, tell me what you're going to do here today. When we taste these beers, how do you go about deciding how the beer is to your palate? What do you look for?
I look for visual and smell. those are all important components of it. You know, I'm looking to make sure it smells right. First of all, my style is a little different. I smell it and look at it, and I don't even touch it, don't even taste it beforehand. A lot of guys pick it up and they do it all at one time. I probably spend a couple minutes just smelling it and then, you know, looking at it, looking at the clarity, seeing how it relates back to the style parameters that we're given to judge against.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make a determination of those factors. Then I go ahead and taste it to see how the flavor and the other intangibles are on it.
That's great. Hi, my name is Steve Wilkes.
My name is Bob Ashlock.
Tell me what a steward does.
We get the we pull the beers for the judges. We bring it to the table, present the beers for them, pour a sample of them for the judging, and then we get to sit back and listen to the judges deliberate.
So you're the guy that makes sure that we're getting a blind sample, that we don't know who it's coming from. No way to, I don't want to say cheat, but
right.
Yeah.
We bring it to the table with the entry number and the style category and pour the samples and get everything going.
So Tim, while we're here, before we get started, take me on a tour of the score sheet here. This is the official BJCP score sheet.
Right. I mean, the score sheet's broken down so you can basically break out, you know, how the beer looks, how it smells, how it tastes, and, you know, mouthfeel, if it's smooth or harsh or really bubbly, and then you have an overall impression. Would you try the beer again? And, you know, under overall, you try and give the brewer, if there's a problem with the beer, you try and give them some kind of pointers on how to fix it, or you give them praise on the beer if it's an excellent beer. And then it's broken out, the score is broken out under each item. Like aroma, there's 12 points possible. Appearance, 3 points. Flavor, 20 points possible. Mouthfeel, 5. And overall is 10, so the maximum possible is 50. And if you look over on your scoring guide over on the left, bottom left, it's broken down into different ranges, anywhere from a real dog of a beer, which is 0 to 13, up to 45 to 50, which is world-class beer. And, you know, most of them are going to be in the middle again. And, you know, the last session we did this morning, we went through all the beers and we got to the last one, and it was definitely the best. And it's surprising when you do that. You get to a point when you find one or two that are really, really the best. And then most of them are in the middle, and then the others are, you know, not so good. They have problems. And then there's other little things on here where you can kind of give them, you know, clues on. You can describe what things you found wrong, if there's different off flavors and that sort of thing. And then there's some style cues that you can give them down on the lower right. So I guess it's broken out so it can be real descriptive. You need to be real descriptive if possible of what you're seeing and tasting and experiencing.
Yeah, because it does the brewer no good if we say 5 out of 12 on aroma.
Can you give them that doesn't help them. Yeah. Or, well, it's worse if you give them a 1 out of 5 on, you know, mouthfeel or something, and you don't tell them what's wrong. They don't learn anything, and they're frustrated.
And they've got your email address.
Yeah, they got your email address if you give your real one.
Okay, now we've got two bottles here in front of us. What do we do? Do we open these, or what happens?
Well, the steward is supposed to open them and pour out a sample for you. The first thing you do is you look at the bottle, and you're looking to see if it's filled correctly, if the bottle is clear. You know, if it doesn't have a lot of sediment in it, unless it's a Hefeweizen that does have sediment. And you're also looking, if you see a ring inside the bottle, that's a bad sign. It means it's probably got some kind of a infection. So these two bottles they've got sitting here look pretty good, actually.
Now this one's got a higher fill rate. They're a higher fill level than I usually do. Do we ding him for that, or him or her?
We usually don't count down if it's a high fill. I mean, different equipment fills it differently. So, I mean, if it was filled clear up to the cap, we might make a note of, you know, it's overfilled, but that's not a big deal.
And it could be that they drew this from a keg.
Yeah. Yeah, if he filled it, that's why I said different equipment, the way they fill it. You know, if you're filling with the classic interior little valve on with your kit, it's going to fill it up pretty much like this one on the left, where you have about an inch and a quarter of head space. And the head space builds up pressure in there. So this one, I wouldn't expect there's going to be either a lot of pressure or not much pressure if it's overfilled.
The suspense is killing me.
All right, first one we have here is entry number 875, category 16, subcategory A. It's a wit beer.
Wit beer? Mm-hmm. So you would write that. That information needs to be written down on your sheet. 16A.
I can do that.
Category
16A.
Description.
Oh, 16. 16 and then A. See, I've already messed up. 16A, entry number?
875.
It's
better to do it in pencil so you can erase it.
I got no pencil. Hey, I got a pencil. All right. Thank you. And then I got to spell it out.
Looks
and then we'll
good.
Go on.
Yep. Clear.
You're showing us the beer. Looks good. Pretty clear for a wit beer there.
Pretty clear for a wit beer, so... We'll see how that works out.
And a little, he's pouring it out. Pretty fair.
3 ounces in each glass for each person.
Pretty fair amount of carbonation there, a little bit.
Yeah.
But for a wit beer, pretty...
Very clear.
Pretty clear.
Okay, so your first impression is what you see. You know, does it have head? Does it retain the head? Is it clear? Is it not clear? What color is it? So that's the first thing you do. And then, you know, as you're observing those things, you're going to write them down. So this is your chance to write them down.
Oh, the pressure.
Okay.
So, Steve, here we are outside afterwards, after the judging. I think that Tim and I judged 12 beers.
You did. And my half of the table judged 11 beers. And now the two head judges are inside doing a mini best of show comparing your flight and our flight to determine the winners for the Belgian ales.
And then once all of the contestants for the best of show, somebody drop something inside. Once all the contestants for the best of show are brought together, then there will be another judging for the best of show for the whole darn thing.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
Although, what I can say is I'm glad that I'm not going to be involved in that process.
Yeah.
That was a lot of work.
It was grueling. I had this sense of not wanting to... of wanting to give good feedback, and yet, you know, it's hard to describe some of those things. You don't realize it's way more pressure than just saying, oh, yeah, that's a good beer, because now you're trying to make that beer, to articulate what's good or bad about that beer, and to articulate it in terms of the particular style that it's been entered into. One of the beers, in fact, the very first beer that my flight had was a nice beer. It was not the beer that it was entered. It was not the style of beer that it was entered into. So either the brewer missed the mark so completely, or he or she just picked up the wrong bottle. And I suppose that can happen. But it was a nice beer that just wasn't a Belgian wit. So one of those things happened. On the other hand, there were some great beers.
Yeah, and Dave said this, and you know, I can see his point that judging really good beers and really bad beers is easier than judging beers that are in the middle of the road.
Yes.
Because you're searching for things that stick out that you can describe. Whereas, I mean, if you get a really, really good beer, it's like, wow, I love this, and I love this, and I love this. And if you get a really bad beer, it's like, wow, you know, this is bad. This is why this is. But the middle of the road ones were, yeah, this is good. I could drink this all day, but did you get that feeling?
Absolutely, I got that feeling. It was difficult to articulate what was exactly wrong or exactly right, because it was okay. And so, you know, some of the beers had, you know, they would tell you that it was meant to be a clone of this or a clone of that. And I actually found that to be very helpful. Maybe that worked in their favor, and maybe it didn't. In other words, if you tell someone that you're trying to clone Pilsner or Kel, and you might have a great Pilsner, but if you've already told them what it's supposed to taste like, that could hurt you.
Now, did you have any real stinkers? I mean, no offense to the brewers, but did you have any beers that had significant problems?
I had one beer that I felt like had significant problems, and I scored it rather low. My two colleagues scored it higher than I did, but there was one that I just didn't like, and I didn't feel like it hit the style, and I felt like it had significant flaws. But out of 11 beers, there was one that I personally both didn't care for and didn't think it hit the style.
But you didn't have any with, like, infection problems?
I think this beer was infected, you know, so.
Because Tim and I had, like, three or four beers that had infections. I mean, there were gushers, and there was some nastiness going on in there.
Well, I thought I was at Jackson Hole, Wyoming for a while there because Old Faithful kept going off over by your table. It was just like, what is that? What is that geyser over there?
I think we cheesed off the steward because we kept
getting them up.
We kept getting the crazy ones, but in that case, it's difficult because, you know, in real life, you'd taste that beer and you would just put it away and you would say, "Oh, I'm not gonna. That's nasty. I'm not gonna taste it anymore." But if there's a flaw in it, you've got to tell them. You have an obligation to tell the brewer what you think is the flaw, whether it is, due to an infection or whether it is due to inappropriate fermentation temperatures or whatever. So it's kind of like, I got to go back in there and take another sip to see if I can nail down what exactly I'm tasting. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I found that to be the most challenging, the constructive criticism. It's relatively easy to say, well, you know, there's no head retention, but it's a lot harder to say, why isn't there any head retention? And you're kind of, at some point, at some level, you're kind of shooting blind. I mean, there could be lots of reasons why there's no head retention. Even something as simple as the glass is dirty, which has nothing to do with the beer. So sometimes it's really difficult to say what is wrong or right about the beers, but boy, I don't envy the judges that have to deal with this at the NHC. I mean, even at this level, I mean, it's really a lot of responsibility, especially when you've, you know, kind of poured your heart and soul into making a beer and taken the time to enter it and the expense to enter it, and you know, then you get some goober like me that's drinking and going, okay.
Well, but you're underestimating yourself because you've got a good palate and I think you know what you're tasting and.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to take the time to do it.
That was just my self-deprecating humor.
Your self-defecating humor?
Well, no, that was the beer you had.
Yeah. I actually wanted to write dog pound down as a descriptor on one of those. But most of the beers that we had were either drinkable or there were some that were very good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there were especially a couple in there that was like, oh. Ah, you know, the clouds parted and the sun came there. I was like, yes, this is that's what we're talking about. And the interesting thing was that, I don't know if it happened with you guys, but Tim and I would, the first couple of beers, he kind of walked me through the scoring and kind of like, well, you know, that, you might, I'm going to score it around here. And, you know, you got to look at the, and there's a little guideline in the lower left-hand corner of the score sheet that says, beers in this range are excellent, and this range are very good, these are good, da, 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 da. And so you could kind of get an idea of how you were scoring. But after a while, Tim and I would compare sheets, and usually we were within 1 or 2 points of each other. The biggest range that we were apart was like 6 points. which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had the same phenomenon. We between the three of us on our panel, we were always within 5 or 6 points, but usually within 2 or 3 points, even though we might think something different. In other words, I might assign a lower point category, say, to mouthfeel, and my colleague might assign a higher category to appearance, but the overall score would come out to be within a point or two. And so, yeah, it was very interesting to see how different people with educated palates approached the beers and thought about them.
And you guys were a lot less chatty than we were.
Oh, we took ourselves very seriously.
We were taking ourselves seriously, but we were kind of like, ooh, I'm getting a little, I don't want to influence you, but, you know, then we taste and, you know, then after we've written down our notes, say, oh, I got a little bit of, you know, pine saw with that, or I got a little bit of, you know.
We were kind of more about, you know, each one did their own thing, and then we would compare notes and, you know, debate it a little bit if there was some debate to be had. But we didn't really collaborate during the judging. We pretty much judged ourselves.
Well, that was exciting. That was fun. I don't know if I'm going to be rushing to do it again anytime soon. I probably will, though, in the future.
Yeah.
If somebody needs some help and I'm around. But that's hard work.
It's hard work, and my palate's a little worn out from it. Mm-hmm. 11 beers, and really critically thinking about them. And we really didn't drink very much beer.
Right.
I mean, we didn't have that many ounces of beer over the course of the day, but... and I certainly don't feel drunk or hungover or anything like that, but I feel like I've been drinking beer for hours.
And you were.
And I was. But really, you know, it's a very active, it's like listening to music, you know, it's a very active sort of thing instead of just passively letting the radio kind of wash over you. Or the same with drinking a few beers. I'm drinking a few beers, but you don't really think about it. But this is very intense and actually makes the process, I think now when I go back and we judged Belgian beers, Belgian ales. And so now I think when I go back and start drinking Belgian beers again, like, in an hour from now, I'll, you know, have some more insight into what I think about that beer and what I like about it and don't like about it, et cetera, et cetera. So
now it's going to be like, I'm sure you as a jazz musician can't fully sit back and enjoy listening to music as you did maybe before you were actually actively playing. Like, I can't watch a newscast without being hypercritical about it, because I know a bit about the background of the process. So we have ruined beer drinking for ourselves.
Yes, we have. I don't know what to do about that.
Except maybe practice some more.
Well, or move on to barbecue judging, which is kind of where I'm at right now.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome, James. And this was great. We need to do this again.
Yes. Okay, Steve and I are here with Desiree and Dave from the High Gravity Homebrew Shop here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're here at the Marshall Brewing Company. And the judging for the Foam Cup has just ended. And then we have the banquet this evening, and then it'll be all over, right, Desiree?
It will be all over.
So what kind of work goes into putting together something like this?
People are actually surprised. There's a lot of work that goes into putting together the homebrew competition. You have to get the database together for people to sign up online. You have to be able to assign judges to all the categories and make sure that they aren't entered into that category. And then you have to make sure that they're available for all the different sessions. So you end up there's this huge matrix that you have to go through in order to make sure everything comes together at the right time.
So what advice would you give someone who is wanting to put together a homebrew competition from scratch? I mean, you guys didn't come in from the very beginning, or did you?
No, the competition, I think, is 12 years old now. It's been going on for several years. When Dave and I first started helping with the competition, there was no database. It was all handwritten, mailed in entries that had to be retyped into a spreadsheet. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Sorry.
That's okay. Your pocket's ringing.
Sorry. And then the next year, there were two different kind of databases. One allowed us to register online, but then it didn't allow us to to put the scores in and do things offline. So we tried to do two different databases and try to tie them together, and that was just dreadful. It was horrible. It was scary. So then the next year, we actually found somebody that knew a lot about coding, and they helped us put together an online database that's made it much easier to organize the competition now.
And y'all worked in computers in a former life, though, didn't you? So.
Oh yeah, Desiree's still our IT department, and she knows enough to be dangerous with databases, and she can put together web pages and build some interfaces and queries to get the data in and out. And without the database, I don't see how anybody really does this.
So, how many people or how many entries did you guys have this year?
311, I think, is our final tally. Was 311,
and that's a record.
That is a record. Last year it was 302, wow, which was a record last year. So each year it's getting a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what seems to be most popular this year?
This year, by far, was the American Ales. We had almost 30 entries into the American Ale category. We actually separated the A's from the B's and C's, and they're in separate metal categories because it was so huge. It would just not feasible to put them all together in one.
And we had three mead tables this year, which was really unusual. A lot of meads this time around.
And we usually have to combine the meads into one category and just judge them all together. But this year we actually got to do the 24s, the 25s, and the 26s separate, and had a real honest best of mead.
Wow.
You know, best of show mead. So that was very cool.
So, how hard is it to get judges to come and participate or get qualified judges? And you and I, Dave, were talking earlier that you guys have kind of a good pool of BJCP certified judges.
We do. We've conducted BJCP training courses four times over the last 5 years. And our club has a little over 100 members, but we have probably 15 BJCP judges, which is a pretty high ratio. It takes a lot of work. It's like a graduate level course in beer and brewing, and it's a commitment, a big time commitment. People have to meet twice a month for 6 months, or every week for 3 months to get it done, and then take the test.
And it has to be, I mean, it's a pretty intensive study session. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not easy, is it?
No, like I said, it's kind of like a graduate level course in beer. It's half lab, half theory, and we go through all the different styles of beer, nearly all of them, everything we can get. There's a couple of them that you just can't get in the United States, like Southern English Brown,
and the Roggenbier.
It's the Northern English Brown.
No, it was the Southern.
Okay. Good.
As homebrew shop owners, this has got to be a big benefit for you guys as far as, you know, from a business perspective, right?
Yeah, yes, it is, because we, that's one of the reasons also I think that Foam has grown so much is they get more sponsorships, so the prizes are better. And since the prizes are better, more people find out about it, and then they find out about us because we're the ones that are giving out a lot of the prizes. So it's a win-win situation when it comes to the business side of the competition.
Yeah. So how many people? What's the ratio of people who are inside the area and outside the area as far as entries? Do you have a breakdown of that?
Last year we had about 13 states represented, and we haven't really looked at the statistics yet to answer for this year, unless you have an idea. I don't think you've had a chance to look at those numbers.
But out of the 13 states, I would say percentage-wise, probably, honestly, just only about half of them are Oklahoma. So I would say about half of the beers that we are getting are coming from outside of the state into the competition.
So, but it's good for you guys to have visibility as well, because you are on the Internet.
Yes.
In this age of computers. So it works across the board, I guess.
Yes, it definitely does.
Mm-hmm. So... final thoughts. I mean, what do you guys, what is the big takeaway of why should people organize a competition like this? I mean, why go to all the trouble? Why to go to all the trouble of the, you know, recruiting all the people and getting all the prizes and all the hours put in? And what's the bottom line? Why do this?
Well, I like the competition just because there's a lot of camaraderie. It's a time of year where we have people coming from other parts of the state and from other states that are helping judge that we see once a year. So that's one of the aspects. You get to see people that you don't get to see on a regular basis, but that you still consider friends and you look forward to seeing them. And on the other end of it is, if you're doing a good job with your competition, you get feedback. And I like giving feedback to people to help them improve their beers. And that's a huge part of the Foam Cup. That's our main mission statement with the Foam Cup, is to, you know, make sure that you're giving the people that enter the competition their money's worth. They put all that effort to ship it to you and to pay their entry fee, and that they should be getting back some help on how to improve their beer, because, you know, there's only so many medals that you get to give away out of the 300 that enter. And so that's what I like. I like the fact that we're hopefully helping people improve their beers.
Very good. And you helped us step into the world of judging today, so.
You guys survived in good shape.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
we're still vertical. And it was a very valuable experience. So thank you all for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Wow. Judging is a lot of hard work. It's very tiring. You wouldn't think it'd be hard, just tasting beers. But you'd be wrong. Thanks again to Desiree and Dave for inviting us over. And that evening at the banquet, Desiree had me read the names of the winners, which was an honor and a privilege and a lot of fun. And you can see pictures of that along with other photos from the Foam Cup competition on our Facebook page, facebook.com/basicbrewing. And by the way, for those of you who were at the competition, Steve drove back and he hadn't had any beer for a couple of hours before he drove back. So everything was safe. I got a little goofy there. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Homebrewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We got shirts and hats on our site. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Underground, How Creatures of Mud and Dirt Shape Our World, and Berman Center Athena Waterproof Mini Massager. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your generous support. Also, check out our associate links on the site with the American Homebrewers Association and Brew Your Own Magazine. That's all. Until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Hope everybody's having fun out in GABF country. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.